Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. It's me, Jody, and this week I am back with four incredible recaps of 90 Day Fiancé Before the 90 Days, TLC's new season of Unexpected, Teen Mom 2, and Married at First Sight. For you Married at First Sight fans, check out my other podcast, Moms on the Rocks. Carrie and I talked quite a bit, probably the first half of the episode, about this current season, as well as last season. You know my feelings about John. So if you don't share in those opinions, get ready to be screaming at me or join me in the cringes. Now, this week, we have so much to talk about, so I'm going to jump right in because you know where to find me on Patreon, patreon.com/realitytvpod. You know where to find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. That's at realitytvpod. Now, it has been less than 24 hours. I am chomping at the bit to talk about Before the 90 Days, so let's get to it. First up is Angela. She is a sprite 52-year-old from Hazelhurst, Georgia, grandmother of six, mother of two grown daughters, and she's a nurse's assistant for a hospice care, or possibly a CNA, something along those lines. Now, please know whatever I say about Angela, it's out of love. I actually grew to fall in love with her just as she did with Michael. There's something about her that reminds me of, I don't know if it's like a woman I knew growing up or a neighbor or someone I've worked with or like a waitress at a favorite restaurant. I can't put my finger on it, but she reminds me of someone that we all know or have in part of our lives. She kind of actually reminded me of Angela from Love After Lockup. I think her name was Angela. She was the woman who had the boyfriend in prison, obviously, but she went to the bus station. He stood her up. I think she was drinking like some Bartles and James wine cooler with her friend one time, and she took sexy pictures of her or something. Hopefully you know who I'm talking about. They were very similar in energy or hair tone or taste in cigarettes. You get what I'm saying. Now, let's talk about Angela's love life, or lack thereof, or hope for the future of. She met Michael, her soon-to-be fiancé that she's going to propose to, on Facebook. No, they weren't Facebook friends. She just happened to get a message from Michael from Nigeria out of the blue one day. Angela is no fool. She knows that Nigeria is, quote, the most scammest capital of the world. However, there was something about Michael. Maybe it was the 22-year age gap, but there's something there where she's never felt as appreciated or wanted before, and Michael is doing it for her. Again, I really enjoy Angela, but I got to break it to her. I get these requests from men all over the world daily. That is because I'm on Facebook and I have our Facebook group and it's got the little 90 Day Fiancé in it. So I am sure in some sort of Facebook algorithm, women like Angela and myself, yes, I'm grouping us together. I'm going there. I can admit it. They find us. All right. Maybe it's a blonde girl thing. I have lighter, summery blonde hair this summer. Perhaps it's a blondes have more fun in Nigeria thing. Now, speaking of Nigeria, Angela knows it's going to be hot, perhaps a little strange, and she may be the only white person there. I almost wonder if it would blow Angela's mind to know South Africa like went through apartheid and all that kind of stuff, because I think she really thinks she's just going to land and be out in the middle of the Serengeti or something. But even so, in the middle of the Serengeti, she thinks that there's a lot of beautiful women that she has competition with because Michael just keeps adding these young, pretty girls to his page. It's just spelling disaster all over the place. Just as big of a disaster as the ketchup on Angela's siding. Yeah, I saw it. It was right by her front door. I had images of Michael Scott from The Office, like his dream come true, where they have ketchup fights. I don't know how a squirt of Heinz 57. Actually, you know, it's probably not even Heinz 57. If I know anything about Angela, I know she shops at an Aldi. It's the Aldi cat sup spray over by her front door. Hey, maybe things on the 4th of July got a little crazy. Well, let's head on down to the cutting up shop. Yeah, and her hairdresser, Heather, who's known her for 10 years. I mean, God, what a supportive friend. Nothing but the nicest things to say about Angela. She's a mess. She's a great person, but she's brave and stupid. Okay, Heather, says the woman who is using a flat iron all over Angela's haystack of hair. I mean, I was ready for that shit to just fall out in clumps. And word to the wise, ladies, if you ever walk into a hair salon and there is wooden decorative lettering above your stylist station that says, whatever, don't have her touch your hair. I don't want anyone touching my head, any part of my body for that matter, that has the attitude, eh, whatever. Because you know what happens? Your hair ends up looking like Angela's. I actually thought Heather was going to be my favorite side character of Angela's, but she's not. Her daughter, Scotty, took first place. Scotty instantly gave me a little bad vibes, and for that, I need to ask her forgiveness. But it was only because she is a dead ringer for Leah from Teen Mom's younger sister, Victoria. Like, Victoria, 5 years, and another stint at stress rehab later. But I like Scotty. My gut instinct was to not like her because of the failed ombre or just the need for a little touch up on her roots. But again, I really like her because she's not going to let her mom get away scot-free on this. Oh my gosh. I didn't even plan that scot-free. Her name's Scotty. Okay, she's not going to let Angela get away scot-free because she's giving her the side eye when they get to that horribly sad and depressing pawn shop. Now, they got good prices, I gotta say that. Vidalia Pawn in or near Hazelhurst, Georgia. A gold men's ring with diamonds in it. $290. I mean, I know a bargain when I see it, and that is a very good price. However, Angela doesn't have the funds, so she's gotta put it on layaway. I think that gave Scotty a little bit of relief because her mom wasn't able to purchase it right away. And it also gave us the chance to hear Scotty's full opinion. It all comes out of love. You can tell that because she's not just dissing her mom, saying bad things about her, like, oh God, she's so stupid. It's more like, my mom works two jobs. She takes care of everyone. This should be her time for someone to be taking care of her, not the other way around. And she sees her mom overlooking all of these red flags. Now, the Bon Voyage party, I'm going to be honest. I was totally thrilled to be a fly on the wall in a little towny bar because what I would give to be able to walk into a bar like that and just people watch, obviously have some drinks too, but just to hear the conversation, pick up on some of that Southern lingo, oh my God, I would love it. I'd also love to know why the whole color scheme. I mean, we knew about the cake because it was the Nigerian flag, or wait, hold on, was it the African flag, because apparently the State Board of Education of Georgia is going to be fielding some calls because no one there knew the difference between Nigeria and Africa. Angela tried to explain it with the least possible effort by saying, well, you know, like we have states here. I don't know how to explain it. Well, just in case you are unsure and you are watching it and you're just trying to play it cool like you do know, Africa is a continent. Just like North America is a continent, and within those continents, there are different countries. They may have different regions, provinces, etc. But let's just learn the basics of geography before we go and embarrass our entire country. Also, besides that green and white cake, which, did it even really look like a flag with rosettes on the side? But I want to know why the white and pale yellow balloons. I should have done some research to see, is it like Nigeria is green, white, and yellow, or are off-white and pale yellow Angela's favorite colors? These are the kind of things that make me think when I watch this show. It's the reason why I drive people nuts in my real life, because I need reasons, I need explanation. Angela, on the other hand, doesn't need or want explanations for anything. She doesn't even dig too hard about Michael not having her picture on his phone and, oh, that she has to quit smoking. Now, the quitting smoking thing was the thing that really put her family over the edge. And it's probably because there's like 10 of them in there just enjoying, just breathing in the lung cancer. I mean, I would have to take a hit off of someone's inhaler after walking out of that thing. I mean, there was just like thick smoke in the air. And also, what the hell was Angela drinking? It looked like pea soup on the rocks. And then when she had that cigarette and she's holding it by her cup and she's flinging her hair around, which has just been flat ironed within an inch of its life, it is dry as my humor most days. I mean, I thought her head was just going to go up in flames any second. But no matter what her friends and family say, Angela is going to Nigeria and she is going to reunite and propose to her love, Michael. Now, scenes for the rest of the season don't look very promising for these two, but oh my God, I can't wait for it. Now let's meet Rachel. She is our solo mom from Albuquerque, New Mexico, with two adorable daughters. Her daughter Ella is 7 and she owns a Barbie house. I am pointing this out because if you ever put together a Barbie dream house or one of those little tyke cozy coops, you know, the ones, the red and yellow ones, if you've ever put them together straight from the box, you will know that will nearly cause the demise of your marriage and or relationship with your partner. Those things are a bitch to put together. So she did that by herself. There's no doubt in my mind that she can handle anything life can throw her way. Now, Rachel has been married before for 3 years, and she ended that divorce 3 years ago. She was a little lonely, needed some things to do to pick herself up, so she found this little karaoke app. Well, turns out on these karaoke apps, you can do duets. Sounds like some of us are going to be meeting up on the weekends, right? I'm just saying, we can make a two-part Baby Got Back if you're up for it. Now, John, all we really know about him is that he lives in England. He plays American football, and he likes to take pictures of his naked reflection with a filthy room in the background. Now, if that were me, that would be the first thing I would see. I wouldn't even be looking at his naked butt or privacies, as my daughter would say. My eyes would have been on the dirty cup and the dirty plates on the floor in the background. But Rachel, apparently she is a better person than I am, and she can overlook that. Now, John is equally of a great person because he overlooked the fact that she was pregnant. This is where this relationship is so, I guess, messy is really the best word for it. It seems like pretty early on in her pregnancy, Rachel broke it off with her baby's father. The baby's name ends up being Lucy. And John just considered himself the father of her yet-to-be-born baby. He was even on the phone with her when she gave birth. Now, up until that point, of course, I was skeptical, but I was kind of like, okay, maybe there is something. But something about him being on the phone while she's giving birth, it just was like, something about that's icky. Now, we find out it gets even ickier because she sent him a piece of her baby's umbilical cord. I could barely say that without gagging. That is so freaking gross to me. Again, I'm just one of those people. I don't even save my kids' baby teeth and that kind of stuff. It grosses me out. Same thing with the little locks of hair. If you do that, that is fine. More power to you. It's just personal preference. So would I want to be sending decaying body parts through the mail overseas? No. Call me crazy. But now it's time because they need to finally come together. However, this is where we get the little, oh, but I forgot to tell you guys something. John was in a bad situation, and it may be a deal breaker for our future. Well, what is it? We find out at this girls' night out with Rachel's friend Beth and Liz that John has a history of, beating people up. He's got a record for fighting, and apparently one of the incidences was so serious that he beat someone up, something at a university. Now, the friends are looking shocked, looking like they're wanting to be supportive. But that baby, I mean, she can't speak, but she was speaking with her eyes. Her eyes were near bugging out of her head, staring at the friends like, girls, really, look at her, get it together. I can't use my words yet, so please say something to this crazy woman before she drags me over there. I mean, the guy's already got my umbilical cord. What the hell else has he got buried in his closet? Well, this guy, he seems like, a supportive guy. He wants to be a father to Lucy, so much so that he's paying for her daycare. Rachel thinks this is really sweet, but I think it is just a picture of how deluded these two are. They're in this fantasy land. They've never been together. They've never had a disagreement, an argument. he's looking like this Prince Charming, paying for her daycare, and whatever he's getting out of it, I don't know. That's kind of the scary part to it to me. Something's off about it. And I think her dad agrees, because when he FaceTimes in, he gives her really good advice. He knows that the guy's got multiple convictions, so he wants to know how serious are those convictions. And Rachel, you got to find out what exactly happened each of these times. Do your research, do your homework. And then he asks Rachel really good questions. He says, okay, does John drink? Well, to Rachel's knowledge, she says once in a blue moon. Then again, look into every file that you can access. And also keep an eye on his temper, because he may be one of those people that seems very even keeled. And then when he loses it, he really loses it and snaps. And you know, you got kids. You got to keep an eye out for that stuff. You can't just jump in with both feet. We'll find out more next week, because Rachel is on the plane and ready to go fly to meet her love, John. Next up is Ricky. He's been married twice. He lives in Columbus, Ohio, and he has two daughters. 12-year-old Amber, who lives with him full-time, is just the most darling little tweenager. I hope my daughter grows up like her. He also has a 21-month-year-old daughter with his most recent ex. Now, Ricky's problem, in my opinion, is that he's one of those guys that just lacks confidence. On more than one occasion, he talked about him not being a good-looking guy, or he's not that good-looking. Guys, and even gals, if you walk in a room and you just exude confidence, even if you have to fake it, you're going to be seen as more attractive. But this, oh God, I'm so ugly crap, people are going to think that. Don't do that. That is not attractive. No one wants to be your pick-me-up in a relationship. Now, I am saying this because I am completely guilty of it myself, but seeing it from the outside, that would be my thing. So I really don't think Ricky is that bad looking. Now, he has tried out dating other ways, but he figured, you know what? I'm going to go online. I'm going to look for some Latina girls, in particular, ColombiaCupid.com. Now, every day he was getting these messages, hola, hola, hola. To me, just hearing hola, hola, hola out of anyone's mouth reminds me of Dora the Explorer and the years that I spent listening to that. So I can't imagine what Ricky saw in it, but apparently he found a woman, Melissa, who made hola, 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 everything that Dora couldn't. She's hot, but she also has other qualities besides being hot. She's a nurse, which means that she helps other people. Perhaps she could have found someone to help her with her Skyping and videoing, because she can't seem to get herself live on video with Ricky. He tried once, but it looked like it was just a GIF or a meme. You know, it was weird. It was like a cartoon rabbit, you know, like the eyes were bugging out and he couldn't tell if it was her or not. Jesus, Ricky, get with the program. And despite all of this, he's decided to trust her. So he booked a flight to Medellin. And you know, I'm going to love saying Medellin all season because it reminds me of Narcos. When the hell is that coming back on? It's one of my favorite shows on Netflix. But anyway, even his daughter, Amber, is like, yeah, Dad, I'm happy you're happy, but maybe just like slow down and meet her first. God, you gotta love a girl who's just smarter than all the adults in her life. Let's jump to a scene at Donnerick's pub with Ricky's friends. I want to be friends with his friends. Ricky, I could take him or leave him, but the friends, I gotta know them. Not often do we get a whole team of Vors, our voices of reason, and there was, what, four of them? I enjoyed what Ricky was wearing. That was about it for the whole scene. That's the only good thing I can say. Because he also admits he's been sending her money every single month, and he's like, what? What's the worst that could happen? And as if the words were just stolen right out of his mouth, his friend with the little cap on his head says, have you seen Locked Up Abroad? And I will even take that one step further. Have you seen Broke Down Palace with Claire Danes and that other chick where they had like the maggots or the bugs going in and out of their ears? Yeah, go ahead and watch that and tell me if you will ever go in and out of a country again to do or meet someone that you have not seen. Moving forward, we get to Ricky sitting next to his computer with his phone and he's texting Melissa. And all Melissa is doing is texting just, okay, yeah. Okay. And then he texts, hey, thinking about you. And she responds, oh, how cute. That right there to me is like, I mean, she might as well just said, fuck you, I'm afraid of you, or get lost. Oh, how cute. It's condescending. It's a brush off. But no, no, Ricky's still gonna go. Because he thinks she might just be thinking, oh, this guy is so cool. Wow, he's still going even though I'm blowing him off. I mean, he's taken a page right out of my 8th grade diary. He's also taken a page out of Kelly Kapoor's diary because he's doing fashion show, fashion show, fashion show at lunch. He's putting on clothes that are way too tight and his daughter is not holding back. She's like, yeah, don't wear that. But you know what? Don't worry. Maybe this fanny pack will cover up my fat roll. No, no, Ricky, please don't wear the fanny pack. I'm sure the Kardashians or something are bringing the fanny pack back, but I'm not buying into it. Don't do it unless you're going out for a long run. You got to put like your little goo packets in. But Ricky, I don't think he's doing a marathon all the way down to Medellin. Well, next time we'll get to see what happens because it looks like he's getting stood up in a restaurant, but who knows? You know, 90 Day Fiancé, they'd love to throw us for a loop. Well, now it's time to check in with two couples that we love to hate. First up, Darcy and Jesse, aka Jesse Von Trapp, eldest of the Von Trapp children. Darcy shows up first thing on our screen wearing this snow beast getup. Nothing could look more ridiculous on this woman. I mean, Darcy, you say you're in the fashion industry, but that doesn't mean you have to be wearing every synthetic fiber fabric on the face of this earth. She's there with her daughters, Annika and Aspen, because she has to try to, you know, portray this I'm a loving mother thing, but she's gone like off the rails. If you've been watching her between seasons, and by watching, I mean, you know, stalking her Instagram and stuff like that, you will see she has just fallen into the trap of I'm a reality star, which means I'm famous. The most recent one, oh gosh, I apologize. I forgot who posted it in the Facebook group, but it's this Instagram picture of her Instagram video of she and her twin sister. It starts out on their feet and they zoom up and they're wearing these House of 11, you know, that's her fashion brand. It, halter top, their boobs, their lips, like everything. It's bizarre looking. It's like, you know that machine in the old movie, Weird Science? It's like something went haywire on that thing, and this is what came out of it. If you're thinking, hey, you know what, Jody, you're being really mean. She looks good. She does, you know, look good. She got herself in shape. But I cannot approve of or condone a mom wearing a leather tank top and a cape while she's making a frozen pizza and trying to act like, oh, this is what I do every day. No. Bullshit. I also need to talk about her eyebrows. Let's just take a moment and remember the olden days when eyebrows used to end, you know, on your face. Her eyebrow journey, I can appreciate her changing things up, her being in the fashion industry and all, but these things were freaking ridiculous. In one scene, they seemed somewhat normal. I mean, still obviously microbladed or drawn on. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. But you know the ones I'm talking about. Her eyebrows started in the normal place, but they ended like in her earlobe. The things just, it's like she was holding her pencil there and then maybe Annika came in, was like, hey mom, and she turned her head and she just kept drawing and forgot. I don't know what was going on there. It's either that or she's going in for an ear cleaning procedure and she wants to make sure they clean the right ear. Something's going on that we don't know about, but a crazy eyebrow is a sign of a crazy person. Think about it. You know I'm right. Well, let's get to flashbacks of Jesse Von Trapp because this was the highlight of the entire 2 hours. We got a flashback of Jesse Von Trapp's mom, Betsy Johnson, and her love guru husband. We also got to see his apartment full of flames. Remember that? Where he had the flame orbs and the fireplace going, and we thought he was going to burn down the place and hide her body. And then, of course, the windmill proposal appreciation, whatever you call that, the will you accept this ring of appreciation. That scene, oh, as much as Darcy is crazy, I still feel bad for her there. I mean, why get on one knee and just put someone through that? He is a monster. Hopefully you don't think I'm a monster because I'm going to bring you to a very dark place here. I'm going to be making your worlds of TLC shows collide because I couldn't help but notice that Darcy has Tony from Sister Wives bubble in her voice when she talks. Did you hear it? She's talking about how she hopes that Jesse is going to be a very good stepdad to my daughters when he comes to New York. Listen for it next time. I swear to God, she's got the Tony bubble. Now, for the fourth time throughout the episode, she said that she's worked on herself physically. I think she means rearranged some things on her face physically as well. And she hopes that Jesse's going to appreciate it. I mean, if you really have to Mr. Potato Head your body for approval from some guy, it's time to move on. It's also time for Darcy to move on from the international terminal, because when she took out that full-size perfume bottle and started spraying herself multiple times with that musky perfume, I wanted to just clothesline her, like classic Hulk Hogan move. It was unbelievable. Who does that in a public airport where you're already miserable? You take out your freaking perfume and start spraying. It's just as bad as the guy who was filing his nails on an international flight sitting next to me. Yeah, like I want to be breathing in your nail fibers, you freaking freak. So yeah, Darcy, I feel bad for her, but when she does that shit, I mean, take yourself elsewhere. Go to a bathroom or somewhere. I mean, where probably that perfume scent would be more welcome, but not over here while I'm waiting for my loved ones. And then freaking Jesse Von Trapp. It's like these two are made for each other in the worst kind of way, because he comes out and what does he do? He drops his two body bags, and they probably really are body bags because we know he's a sociopath, right in the middle of the walkway. Like, oh, thanks, asshole. Let me just swerve around all of your shit because you got to go hug your little science project over there. What the hell is wrong with these people? I don't care if you have a camera crew there. This isn't the 80s. We can't just go in and out of terminals, drop our shit everywhere, leave your luggage unattended. And you know what? If that were me, I might accidentally kick your bag. Now, in the car, Jesse starts asking for like a docent-led tour of New York. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't Darcy from New York or around the area? I know she lives in Connecticut now, but shouldn't she know a little bit more about it? I mean, I'm from Chicago suburbs, but I know certain buildings in Chicago. I probably even know certain buildings in New York. She just seemed like, I don't know, she talks a good game, but she can't back it up. But also, I mean, Jesse, really, go get yourself a little, tour books or whatever the hell, what the hell's his name? You guys are all gonna be screaming at me. Rick Steves, yeah, go buy one of his books, print one off of PBS. I'm sure he has a little guide. And although Jesse Von Trapp probably won't appreciate this, some of you will, I think he's like a big stoner, which is kind of funny. Okay, now I need to talk very briefly about Jesse's hair. This needs like a whole segment in and of itself. The bangs. What's going on? There has been some talk about it, and here is my theory. I have watched enough YouTube tutorials. I have seen people do this themselves. I think he had a little accident with a flat iron. I know he enjoys it because I've seen his modeling pictures that he puts out there. I think he went a little heavy in the front and he burned them off. Didn't one of the girls actually on Teen Mom or 16 and Pregnant, she did that one season and she had to wear one of those cloth headband things until they grew back? I think that's what happened. He burned them off and now he's got the little baby hairs growing back in. If that's not karma, I don't know what is. Now let's get to Paul and Carini. Right out of the gate, Paul very proudly tells us that he's definitely a mama's boy and he works in IT and he lives with his parents. Okay, Paul, number one, saying that you are a mama's boy is not a turn on to anyone, like no one, not even Carini, I guarantee it. Also, texting Carini and talking to her online and Skyping and managing your Facebook and Instagram and making comments on my Instagram about stuffed animals at Disney World it doesn't qualify as working in IT, all right? It just doesn't. Now, quick little question slash comment, because I really want to know if I was the only one. When his mom would call to him, didn't it sound like she was calling him Pa? Like, you know, you would say like, great dinner, Ma. Thanks, Pa. Love you too. Like mother, father. I know now she was calling him Paul, like P-A-U-L, but the U-L would trail off. But when I was hearing that, it was giving me weird mother, son, marriage, too close for comfort vibes. Also, something else that made me very uncomfortable was when Paul said about Karini, even though she's 21, she knows the ways of a woman. I mean, really, Paul, you don't need to tell us that. You also don't need to buy her special toys, which I'll talk about in just a minute because I got to build up to it. At that point in the episode, I was typing so furiously my notes of things that I wanted to bring up to you. First, let's get to the little flashbacks that we had, you know, our best of scenes, the penis sheath, of course, all of his little flubs and mix-ups and, you know, where's the boat dock? Ah, ha, 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 ha. At one point, he was listing off all of his previous fears. I thought he was going to break into Baby Got Back because he led into it like there was a possibility of kidnappers, hijackers, piranhas, and a kinda don't want none unless you got buns, hun. Well, Paul doesn't have buns. He doesn't even have a straight back. I mean, he would be more like Humpty Hump, right? Like he's got like the hump on his back. Oh God, we need like a throwback episode because man, I miss those songs. Anyway, back to Paul and the things that he loves, like a hoarded house. Heyo. No, I can't even joke about that one because it really was like a colliding of the worlds. It was A&E Hoarders meets 90 Day Fiancé. I feel badly for his mom, but really, Paul, you live there too. Straighten that shit up so your mom's not embarrassed. I mean, it's no wonder he's got crates and hairballs and all that other shit because all of that crap around him is just the norm. He's got to pack his entire life in there. He's probably got dead cat skulls and shit for good luck. Now, even with all of these things that he should be embarrassed about, guess what Paul is embarrassed about? Karini's stuffed animals. Again, this is coming from a man who very proudly collects hairballs and gives them out. And he's embarrassed and thinks that it's juvenile of her. Fuck off. Now, he also has to bring a little something called an oopsie arson record. Yeah, you see, Karina's dad is not stupid. He wants to see all the black and white, what went down with Paul and burning shit and stalking. You know, the classic yada, yada, yada. But, you know, Paul's a little skeptical himself. He wants to see some records from Karini, and that would be the emojis that she's been sending to people on Instagram. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I am getting a Paula and Russ vibe here. Maybe not completely and as thoroughly as contrived as those two, but these two have been on Instagram and Facebook and all this other crap for months about breaking up, getting back together. I think it's Paul's really weak attempt at keeping them relevant. Clearly, we know now they're together because she's pregnant. I'm just hoping that we don't get a season full of BS like we did from Paula and Russ. Now, I told you we were going to talk about the special toys, and now is the time. So if you feel like you're not emotionally prepared for this, just skip ahead, 30, 45 seconds. Paul and his mom are driving in the car, and his mom seems a little agitated, dare I say jealous, because Paul has been getting all these different things for Karini and she just thinks it's ridiculous, it's immature, but also disrespectful. And that's when Paul gets a creepy look on his face and he asks, special toys? Yeah. You see, Paul had purchased some adult toys for Karini by her request, and Mother Paul just happened to be, you know, digging through his personal items as Mother Paul normally does, and she stumbled across them. I can't imagine what the fallout of that was. Was it tears? Was it getting hairballs back from years past? A betrayal of trust of sorts? Whatever it was, his mom isn't letting it go. And I gotta tell you, I think in a normal mother-son relationship with normal to average boundaries, if a mother were to find something like that, she wouldn't have said anything. Just keep your mouth shut, pretend like it didn't happen. It isn't something you would want to confront your grown adult son on. Isn't he like in his 30s or something? It's just not something you bring up because it's between him and his significant other. That's just my Dr. Jody input there. Now they get to the airport and Paul has a classic scamper off up the hill moment when his mom pulls up and he starts screaming, "Stay, stay, stay, stop, stop, stop." Okay, Paul, take it easy. You can just say, "Hey, pull over right here." It's that weird, immature lack of social awareness or lack of communication skills that just makes Paul stand out among the crowd, right? Okay, well, they say their goodbyes at the airport. Again, it was very weird. They're just like, "Goodbye, mother. Goodbye, son." And you know why? It's because I think they learned their lesson and they exchanged their hairballs behind closed doors. Now, after a quick break, I'm going to be back with season 2 of Unexpected. We are back again with season 2 of Unexpected on TLC. Thanks again to those of you who last season, even weeks into the season when I hadn't started watching it, were like, "Jody, you gotta start watching this show because you know what? Your teen pregnant mom dance card is never full. Tune in if you're a teen mom fan. Different vibe, a little bit more heart and soul to the show. And honestly, it is, I hate to say it's entertaining because it's kids who are pregnant, but it really does keep your attention a little bit more than Teen Mom does these days. Well, let's start out with a squeaky chair of mine and our newest couple, Chloe and Max. Chloe is 16, really reminds, I know it's not only me because some of us were talking in the Facebook group, really reminds us of Lily from last season. Maybe it's the naive look, the deer in the headlights, the, "Oh girl, you have no idea what you're getting yourself into" look. But yes, she's very cute. Her boyfriend, Max, who's 18, I want to say he's like the new Shaden. I mean, the guy is just the worst. She's 27 weeks pregnant. They've only been together 3 months, or they were together 3 months when she found out she was pregnant. Doesn't really matter because the only reason she slept with him was because she thought that he would leave her if she didn't sleep with him. I got to tell you, as a mother of a son and a daughter, that scares the shit out of me. And you know what? Maybe that's why they call us the learning channel. I am learning something and my kids are going to have not just one talk. This is going to be an ongoing conversation because if that is really what girls are thinking these days, that's messed up and we need to do a better job as a village of people raising one another's children. Now, Chloe, just like all the girls or boys on this show, she is the mother of a teen mom. Her grandma was a teen mom. You know, it goes back generations. The only thing I didn't get in the first couple scenes, and I may have missed something, please fill me in, was that Max kept on wanting to spend the night at her house or have her spend the night at his house, but she was very resistant. I don't know if it's because she's very compliant with her parents and she still respects their rules, or if there's something else where like he's living there part-time. I don't really get that whole situation. So let me know if I missed something in the flurry of me taking notes, trying to get the setup of their background. We quickly made our voices of reason for this couple, and that is Chloe's stepdad, Nate, and her mom. They're actually a very cute couple. And her stepdad does a really good job of keeping his cool, not isolating or being super condescending towards Max. I mean, God only knows, I want to freaking smack the kid upside the head. And we've only seen him, 15 minutes out of an hour episode. But Nate is asking him, stepdad Nate, you know, what is your plan? What steps are you taking to get ready for this baby? Well, Chloe's like, "We're not asking you for money. We have money." And her stepdad's like, "Oh, really? You do? From where?" And she's like, "Oh, well, not me, but Max does." Well, first of all, my question is, what does Max do to be making all these big bucks? Like, he's like the little guy on the Monopoly board, little Monopoly man. Oh, he's just, you know, money bags Max. And he even gets defiant then because he's like, what do you mean? Just because we're teen parents, that we're not going to be millionaires. We have plans to buy a $1 million house in 10 to 15 years. So don't go judging us, Mr. McJudgerson. Okay, Max, I would love to see this 10 to 15 year plan that you've mapped out with Bill Gates, right? How do you plan to save millions while paying for an infant and probably your girlfriend if you're planning on moving in together in 2 years? I mean, the kid is just delusional to the extent that he is an asshole because he thinks if you even ask him a simple question like, hey, how are you going to pay your water bill? He goes on the defensive and just goes off the deep end. Well, at the end of this, you'll know where he's getting his money. But real quickly, let's go to that 4D ultrasound appointment. And Moneybags Max comes in, and you know what? Not only does he want the $89 package, he's going to upgrade it to get the DVD and the stuffed animals. Whoa. Okay, maybe we did underestimate him. I mean, what next? You're going to tell me that he's able to supersize it? Whoa, I mean, put a ring on it, and then let's get to Wells Fargo so we can get approved for that $1 million house. He's right on track. Now, during the 4D ultrasound appointment, Chloe's mom just starts staring at the back of Max's head when Max is talking to Chloe's belly. It was so awkward, and it was just like, okay, asshole. Like, she's not going to answer back. She's not going to reach through Chloe's uterus and be like, oh, hey, Knuckles, Dad, I can hear you in there. I mean, the kid is just clueless. I think both of them, of course, they're young, they're dumb. They don't know until that newborn is screaming in the middle of the night what they've done. But they're just thinking it's like La La Land. Like, it's just going to be a little baby doll. They get to pick the features like an American Girl, right? Like, whose hair are they going to have? Should we do a dark brown like yours and then hazel eyes like mine? They don't get it. And you can tell her parents, no, you know what? This is going to fall back on them. But as long as their daughter is supported by them, that's all that they can do. Okay, let's check in with Lexis and her mom, Kelsey, who's looking freaking amazing. Way to go, Kelsey. Or should I call her Gigi because she doesn't want to be grandma? I love Kelsey. I think she's done a great job. She's turned lemons into lemonade. She's doing the best she can. Now, Lexis, I'm not going to diss the girl. I mean, she's a young girl. She's very cute. But you can just tell she's at a point in her life, like we all have been, most of us after we've had children, where you just are not putting yourself first. She looks depressed. She looks really frustrated, really tired. And you can just tell that she's got a lot of stuff emotionally going on. And sure enough, she tells us so. So the reason that she and Shaden broke up, she said, was not Shaden's fault. It was actually her fault, which, I mean, jaw to the floor because we all hated Shaden last season. But turns out she was cheating on Shaden with this girl, Hunter. Or no, not Hunter. Hunter was her friend. She was cheating with this girl named Lily. Now, there's some things that we should know about Lexis, and it's that she's coming into her own, and part of that is owning her sexuality and being open with it, and she's saying that she's bisexual. The lunch where she goes into her dating history with her ex-girlfriend Lily, I really thought that scene was pretty profound, maybe not for viewers, but for me in a way that I was like, wow, I think it's really amazing that in 2018, you can have teenagers who are so accepting of themselves that they're so willing to put it out there and they're not ashamed of who they are, who they love, what they enjoy, their preference for whether it's your sexuality or, you know, I just thought it was amazing. And it made me really optimistic for our future. I know this is getting like really flowery. I don't want it to get too political, but I just think it was really cool for Lexis to be able to do that, be so comfortable with it. And way to go, youth of America, that you are not keeping it a secret or being ashamed of yourselves for anything. No matter what you are or what you like, you know what? If people don't like it, they don't like it, but good for you. Okay, I got to get off that little it's not even a soapbox. I just wanted to say I think it was freaking awesome and good for you, TLC, for not censoring it or leaving that out, because you know what? That is real life and you are the learning channel. We're learning something. And really the only thing else we learn from Lexis and Kelsey is that Lexis feels like she needs to make amends with Shaden, and it looks like from the previews for the rest of the season, that may mean getting back together with him. Time will tell. Now, Emily and Diego, another new couple. Emily is the cute girl with the curly blonde hair whose mom looks like, to me, the Kristen Wiig character. She comes on Weekend Update and she's always like, oh, I'll tell you. And she does like music reviews and stuff like that. Anyway, I love her mom. I think she is a little bit more, not conservative, maybe not as emotional. Like, she is not a warm, fuzzy person. And I think that turned a lot of people off, but I think that's just her demeanor. Now, Emily with an EY was cheer captain. She was on softball or something. And then she said something about rodeo and I got dizzy because you know my fear of horses. Much like Diego, I hate to admit that because Diego ends up looking like a big old asshole, but I'll get to that in a minute. Emily and her mom have a different kind of relationship. I think her mom thinks that they've talked about a lot of things that they haven't talked about, or it could be the flip side. You know, Emily is a teenager, and you never want to tell a teenager, like, oh, you just don't remember because you're a teenager. But sometimes, you know, teenagers and parents, they're seeing things from a different point of view. Her mom may have had a conversation with her about it, and Emily may just not remember it. But, you know, I was really hoping that her mom would ask her, you know, let's say we did have that conversation. Would it have prevented you from getting pregnant? I have a feeling the answer probably would be no. I think she would have had sex anyway. Well, speaking of sex, let's talk about her sex life. I know, doesn't it feel disgusting? She's, you know, pretty much a child and here we're talking about her sex life. But you know what? It's on TV, so we got to do it. Well, she was a virgin. And so was her boyfriend, Diego, before they had sex with one another for the first time. And this is when we hear Diego speak. And he, out of the blue, is just sitting there with a confused look. And then he pipes up and says, and she is the first girl I had intercourse with. I feel like I need to get to know Diego more, but his mannerisms are different. Something's a little strange with Diego, especially because Emily's mom said something along the lines of, like, Diego doesn't know how to communicate with people. The things he says comes off condescending, not just to you, but to everyone. And Emily agreed, like, yeah, he just talks to everyone like that. So I don't know if it's like a personality choice by Diego, or maybe he's like very light on the spectrum. Something I think is going on with that. But like I said, we don't know enough. And I'm not saying that's even a bad thing. It was just something we need to know more about Diego. Now, I also want to talk about Emily's experience or her opinion about the gynecologist, because she seemed more upset about going to the gynecologist for the first time and, you know, having to put her legs up into stirrups and all that kind of stuff than being pregnant or anything else. So my question is, do you think if parents were to talk to their teenage daughters and sons, but in this instance, I'm talking about daughters, and you'll see why in a second. Do you think if we were to talk to them about what it's like going to a gynecologist and perhaps go with them whenever, at whatever point, I'm not in the teenage years, so please guide me on this, moms of teenage girls. If you told them, you know what, when you're pregnant, guess how many times you have to go to the gynecologist and do this? I mean, all the time when you're pregnant. Do you think that would discourage them from getting pregnant, or perhaps be like, hey, we're at the gynecologist now for your appointment. Let's get on some birth control so that you don't have to come back here, because if you get pregnant, you're going to be doing this monthly and then eventually weekly. Just a thought. My true opinion is that if they're going to have sex, they're going to have sex. But do you know what I'm saying? For maybe girls who are super squeamish about that, it may discourage them. Okay. Anyway, let's get back to their whole situation. Diego ends up being a big old jerk. And we see that and we hear that when Emily calls him on the phone and she wants him to come help pack the hospital bag. Truth be told, I don't think any guy is dying to pack a hospital bag. I tried remembering, you know, did I pack a hospital bag with Dave? Did I do it on my own? I think I would have remembered if he would have helped me because he probably would have been complaining the same way. I just don't think it's anything that a guy is dying to do. I think it's just one of those things that you do because you're excited about it, because you're reading about it in the baby books. So if you're not the one reading the baby books and the what to expect when you're expecting, you're going to think it's just like asking to take the garbage out. It's just another task on the list. Now, do I think Diego and Emily are going to be together for the long run? No, because we see very quickly on, he just, you know, ducks out. I actually felt really bad for Emily and her mom when they both break down crying and they're upset on the couch. I didn't catch exactly what went down and I didn't want to go back because just seeing moms and daughters who were close when they were growing up and now they don't get along, it tugs at my heart because it puts fear in me. Like, oh my God, Paige and I are going to be estranged when we get older. Okay, so let's move on to our last girl, and that is Michaela. Michaela's from last season. She and her boyfriend, Kalen, remember I was a big fan of Kalen. I thought he was a good kid. They were on and their moms were the ones that were going at it. Michaela's mom is Shannon, although she lives with Grandpa Tiny Tim. I totally forgot about Tiny Tim and her grandma, Cindy, and Kalen had his mom, Shelly. Now, I have a feeling Shannon's going to put me over the edge this season based on the previews. Now, Michaela has been bonding with her more, which to a certain extent is good. Like, okay, she's repairing the relationship that they did not have growing up because Michaela's grandparents raised her. However, now Shannon wants Michaela and baby Timmy to move in with her and her baby who's about the same age. But it's not just like, hey, I want to be your mom again. She wants to be roomies under the guise of being her mom because she wants Michaela to pay half the rent. Now, if they were friends or sisters, I could see that. But I'm agreeing with Grandpa Tiny Tim here because he thinks it would be a spit in the face to himself and his wife if Michaela moved out to go with her. Like, here we raise you. We support you in having your son. I think the baby's like 8 or 9 months old or something at this point. And now you're just going to move out. And like her grandma Cindy says, where does she expect you to get rent money? Well, we all know where she's expecting rent money from Michaela. It's from this show. I also think she has like some YouTube channel or something like that. But I got to tell you, I mean, I get enough of these families and these girls from just watching the show. I cannot bring my life to the point where I'm now watching YouTube subscriptions or however the hell that works. So clearly, Shannon is having Michaela move in because it's to her advantage. I'll have my daughter move in. She pays half the rent. Win-win. Well, yeah, it's win-win for her because she gets a bigger apartment. She'll probably have Michaela helping to watch her kid, and she gets rent money. That is so messed up. There's no doubt in my mind that if Michaela did not pay rent, Shannon would still want her to move in. No frickin' way. She wouldn't even buy her own parents a new microwave. Did you see that dinosaur in the background? I mean, if you won't even spring for that for your parents who have been raising your kids, you're not going to be helping your daughter with any handouts. Now, I want to touch on Grandma Cindy for a second because I was wondering to myself, how did Shannon come to be Shannon? You know, I love the backstory. I love the psychology of it all. Because Tiny Tim, he says what's on his mind. He kind of seems like a hard ass. He seems like he wants to hold Shannon to a higher standard. But when he talks about her and he says stuff like, you know, your mom or Shannon can't even make it week to week. How is she expecting you, a child, to pay rent? He's dissing his own daughter, right? But why does Cindy stay quiet then? So I think Shannon is Shannon because Cindy has been her enabler all her life. Now, I don't know these people, but I'm going to take my little background knowledge of being a parent myself, being an observer of other parents, being on the other side of the table as a teacher, seeing parent-child relationships, and I'm going to guess Shannon was probably a little troubled as a child, as a student. Maybe she had some special needs, And Cindy was the type of parent who would always make excuses for it. Like, for example, she didn't take the test because someone else stole something of hers, or she was cheating on the test because she forgot her glasses at home. I'm probably not giving exact examples, but it just strikes me as Cindy not wanting to upset Shannon and also not wanting to upset her husband. So she would just kind of take a neutral ground, even though she may really want to side with her husband, but she's too afraid of her daughter. And what does that do? That strengthens an entitled child to become an entitled adult and an irresponsible adult. Just my little doctor of psychology from the University of TLC. Doesn't mean, you know, it's the truth. It's just allegedly just my thought. Now, you know, I'm saying that because I'm scared shitless of Shannon. You saw how she lost it on Shelly in the park that one time. Ugh, Lord only knows what she's capable of to me. Now, next week, we get to meet some more couples. And after this quick break, we'll catch up with the teen moms from Teen Mom 2. Oh, Teen Mom 2, you really outdid yourself this time. I really think at this point we should just forget the tell-all, stick with this behind the screams. This is the perfect way to end the season. We start with a really quick flashback of the Kale versus Brianna versus Javi versus Kale, you know, that whole cycle of garbage trash. Well, at the time of this behind the screams slash behind the tell-all taping, the show has already started airing, so the Twitter drama is in full swing. Kale is saying that Brianna broke, quote, girl code because they work together. But like I always am, I'm on Brianna's side. They really don't work together. They happen to be on the same show. They live in different parts of the country. And they are not friends. They weren't friends before this. Clearly are not going to be friends after this. But Brianna's right. They don't work in the same 9-to-5 job where they're working in the same cubicle and report to the same boss, have the same lunch hours. I mean, it's not the same thing as truly working together. Now, my favorite exchange is Kale posting on Twitter, and I'm just going to read it verbatim because it is perfection. Some people aren't even worth the time and energy. I've worked too hard on my books and degree to throw it away on someone who runs their mouth for a living. Okay, let's break this down. Some people aren't even worth the time and energy. Well, literally this entire season has been you putting your time and energy towards talking about Brianna. The I've worked too hard on my books. Okay, your ghostwriter or your co-author has put in a lot of hard work on your books, but last I checked, I don't think you are in the publishing arena. Also, her degree. She doesn't want to throw it away. Well, no one's asking you to throw away your degree, whatever your degree is in. Brianna's not saying, hey, go get your diploma. Let's toss it. I mean, are you going to lose your degree because you're on this show? That just makes no sense. It was just her attempt to throw it in there that she went to college. And then she's not going to throw it away on someone who runs their mouth for a living. Have you looked in the mirror? Well, I know you have because it's full of makeup because you are actually running your mouth for a living. Not only are you on TV running your mouth, but don't you have a podcast that you're oh so proud about that you promote every single time? As a podcaster myself, that's what we do. We run our mouth for a living. The girl is just self-destructing in the most hilarious way right before our eyes. Now, like I said before, this is the reunion taping, so all of the moms are in town for it, except Janelle, because David. However, Janelle has no problem having Barbara go to bat for her against Kale and for her being on Brianna's side there. It's just very interesting how Janelle uses Barbara to her advantage and is all about her going when it's to her advantage. Then we have Nathan, who arrives looking like freaking Lou Ferrigno, and he hugs Barbara, who looks like a little Minnie Mouse next to him. Nate's also brought his new girlfriend, who looks strikingly similar to his former girlfriend. He definitely has a type. And he's also brought along his friend Josh. Josh looks like he showed up ready to do a sizzle reel for Million Dollar Listing New York. He does not fit in physically with Nathan's type of people he hangs around with. Maybe this is a sign of better things, but still, I get a little shyster vibe from him too. Now, Barbara and Nate are talking outside, just trashing Janelle and David, as they should. And then a fan drives by in a cab, and ugh, Barbara just made my little black heart sing. Because as these people are saying, "I love you, Barbara," she like had a little Countess Luann moment, like a, "Huh, yes, my fans," and like waves them off like, "Huh, this happens all the time." But then they kept screaming, "We love you, we love you." And out of the blue, she just goes, "It's all true." And they all start laughing and laughing and laughing. And she says she always tells people that. Well, maybe I'm the only one, but what is the joke? What's so funny about that? They just think it is just, oh my God, that Barbara, she's a riot. What a cut up. What a line. You with me here? Like, I don't get it. Well, anyway, Chelsea's pregnant. Did you know that? And she wants to stay in her little bubble of pregnancy because drama's for nerds, babe. I can't with her. Well, then she goes up and she goes to do this podcast with Kale. I mean, the amount of makeup in that room. Can you just imagine the white towels with all that bronzer and foundation and contouring going on with these girls? Hopefully they do wash their face. I mean, it is just ridiculous. I'm starting to think the only reason Kale does this podcast, or at least the only time she does the podcast, is when she has full hair and makeup. I've said it before, there's no way she's even breaking even on this podcast with the amount of money that she's spending on hair and makeup, because I know what people make doing a podcast, and trust me, she is losing money doing this damn thing. The only thing she's gaining is confidence and delusion. I was really hoping to hear what they were going to talk about with Chelsea, because I mean, just to hear Chelsea's going to just say, "Oh, parenthood is wonderful, and Cole is so cute, and I'm in my Aubrey little Watson." But no, before she can say anything, Kale just starts going off. You know, no one really gives a shit about Kale's drama. She is just in this world where she's got all these friend assistants around her that make her think her life and her problems are a much bigger deal than they are. The only thing that Kale really should be looking into is some sort of dissolver for the filler she put in her lips. All of these girls did it. Leah did it too. What the hell? Kale's mouth does not need to be any bigger than what it is. Chelsea's sitting there like a deer in the headlights because Kale just starts going off, and Chelsea, you know, she wanted to stay out of everything. But Kale's got to go on and on and on about Brianna tweeting a comment saying that Chris had allegedly beat Kale up in front of her kids. And Kale claims she's not upset about anything that Brianna and Javi had to do with one another. Like, she's so over that. It's just about that comment right now. Well, that's bullshit. No matter what, Kale's going to be switching things up with what she's mad at, so she has never-ending and everlasting reasons to have a grudge against Brianna or anyone, because she does this with everyone. Now we go to Leah again. She had some sort of lip filler or Botox maybe in the little lines around her mouth. These girls and their fillers, they're filling up their asses, their lips, their boobs. God only knows what Kale got done and what she needs to get done. But she's wearing those short shorts with quite a lot of pride. I mean, I work all day, every day in the summer to prevent my shorts from riding up as high as Kale wears hers. I don't know how that can be comfortable. And Bones got them on too. This is like the new style with all the girls, I think. Like the mom jean things and the short shorts around your crotch area. I don't get it. I don't think it's flattering on anyone, even thin, model-y girls. It's just not a look for anyone. But let's get to it, because Kale sends a text to Brianna saying, "Hey, let's talk it out." Well, Brianna is like, where the hell is this coming from? Sure, I guess I'll sit down with her. Brianna looks gorgeous, by the way. So Brianna goes to the room. She doesn't really have any expectation, it seems. Like, okay, I'm just going to go here. I'm going to hear what she has to say, whatever. But Kale, she's putting on her shoes, lacing them up, and then her friend Becky comes in, who I thought her name was Peach, or maybe she just looks like the friend Peach. And Bone is also there, and they are just hyping her up, like, oh, you're going to fight her. Yep, you better lace up those shoes. Better pull that hair back. I mean, what kind of friends are they at this point? Well, Kale and Brianna and Felicia and Andre, the security guards, all go into, it looks like a conference room together, like a big table in the middle. Now, we can't see them, but we can hear them. And Kale starts yelling, I want to know why you're so comfortable talking about my kids and Chris. You don't want me talking about your mom and your sister and your kids. But Brianna stops her right there and says, yeah, but you do anyway. Like, just relax. We're here to talk. And then Kale screams, no. And then it sounds as if Kale got up like she was going to go towards Brianna, lunge towards her, because Brianna starts screaming, what are you going to do? Just stay away from me. Keep your hands off me. Stay away from me. And then it's only at this point that Brianna says, listen, don't talk about me. You're the one who's talking about me, but now I can't say anything to defend myself. Okay, yeah, Kale, you never talk about me. It's all on me. And Kale even admits in that moment, it's kind of quiet, drowned out in the background, but she says, yeah, I do, meaning that she does talk about her. And then that's when you hear the awesome line, just let me hit her one time, one time. Okay, I am so glad Brianna walked out at that point saying she's corny. I really think that is the ultimate insult, the ultimate diss, because she's not even taking Kale seriously. Like, okay, whatever, way to bring it to a level that you know you could never bring it to. Now, Kale comes out and she is fired up. She's saying, oh, Brianna, she can't say anything to my face. Yeah, I knew it. No, Kale, Brianna did tell you to your face. She just pointed it out that you also say the same shit about her. So why are you so upset when you do the same shit? But Kale is screaming all, oh, I knew it. I knew she'd do this. Again, yeah, you knew Brianna would do this because you planned it out to bring her off camera and try to attack her, right? Now back from commercial, Shirley tells Brittany what went down in that room. She tells her Kale came in with her shoes on, hair pulled back, and Brittany's face, God, you know I love that girl. She's like, okay, well, there's security guards there, so why is she even pretending like she was really going to fight anyone? And everyone in the room was laughing at her, including the security guard that was in the room. She's in the background. She's at the table. She quickly moved out of the frame, is that what you call it? Out of the shot when they went back to her. But she was initially at the end of the table laughing as if she was agreeing with Brittany that Kale's full of shit. Now, Kale's story is quite different as she tells Leah that Brianna was the one who wanted to fight her. And my favorite part was Leah just rolling her eyes, like agreeing with her because, you know, she doesn't have anything quick or smart or witty to say. And then when Kale walks out of the room, Leah does this little Paris Hilton, love you, love you. Okay, Leah, oh, gosh, she really is so stupid. Okay, so let's fast forward to moments before taping on stage. There's a very awkward moment where Barbara is in the hallway waiting with Chelsea, and she tells Chelsea, oh, Jace is just dying to see Aubrey. And you can tell Chelsea's like, Oh, yeah, totally. We should definitely get those two together. But you can tell Chelsea's like, yeah, that's not going to happen. You know, she's going to call Cole and be like, Cole, don't bring Aubrey around. Jace is looking for her. Now, then the Cowardly Lion stomps on in, gives Barbara a hug. And if you pause, you can totally see Barbara's disdain for her because Barbara sneers at her, like her allergies just kicked in and she's staring her up and down like her nose is all scrunched up, turned up. she can't stand her. She can smell Kale's BS because, I mean, well, let's face it, she's Janelle's mother. She's raised a couple crazy kids. She knows crazy when she sees it. Now, one by one, all the moms, Barb, Brittany, they're all called to the stage. And then Brianna, you know, I don't know if I just missed the commercials, the previews coming up. I was not expecting this. Brianna comes out and, I mean, losing it is not even the word for it. She is screaming at Kale, like, oh, you're talking a big game without the cameras around. And now you're here on stage. You have the opportunity to beat my ass, but now you're not going to do it. You're sitting there all sweet as sugar, all composed on the couch. No, 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 Kale. Brianna's got your number. You got this like, oh, hold me back, tough chick thing. But now look at you, because you're sitting here and you know you are not that tough. So Brianna goes for it. Security tries to hold her back. Brittany spider monkeys over the couch. Security grabs both of them. Kale scampers off doing the classic Jody in PE class move. This is where, well, I really used it most often in basketball, where, you know, you find one person to play very aggressive defense and you're like, okay, you guard me so no one can throw the ball to me because I do not want to get my hands on it. I will guard you, very aggressive defense, so you don't get the ball. This is exactly what Kale did. She's purposely hiding behind the security guards so they can't get at her, but she can pretend like, oh, yeah, I'm in the game. I'm trying to get to you. No, can't get past me on that one. Now, Brittany is following her around, but Kale doesn't know it. And Brittany just pounces from behind, and then it is on. That's when Brianna really loses it. She does what I call the sumo death roll. You can also get out of, like, if someone's tickling you, I can't stand tickling. You just do the sumo death roll. It's where you just put all your dead weight into it, and you just roll to the right, roll to the right. Well, she does this in an attempt, I don't think to get to Kale, but to get to her sister, because that was a real primal scream right there. But let's take a second here. What is Kale doing? Oh, she's trying to get to Brianna, right? No. She's just clearly trying to put as much distance as she can between them. I think Brianna looked absolutely batshit crazy. I'm not excusing her behavior, but I understand her frustration at Kale's hypocrisy in saying one thing and acting another and then doing another. The throwing shit and breaking the lights, that was terrible and inexcusable. I hated seeing Brianna do that. The real MVP award goes to that assistant who caught the picture frame. I mean, he even looked surprised. Who knew a clearance item at Home Goods could make it through a teen mom tantrum? Now, back in the dressing room, Shirley and Brittany are pissed at Brianna because she shouldn't have come out looking like a crazy person, because now she looks like the psycho and Kale looks like the victim. Now, meanwhile, Kale, I think she's on a completely different floor altogether. She's pumping her fist like she's on a prison yard. She's saying, oh yeah, Brianna didn't beat her up when she had the chance. No, Kale, that would actually be you. She's saying, oh yeah, they should have let me have her. Okay. You can't even move in the jeans you're wearing because they're so tight, hence why she can't even wait until the crew is out of the conference room to peel her things off. That is so freaking gross. She's disgusting. Now, Javi and Kale are equally disgusting and made for each other, because in walks Javi, just as full of shit as Kale. He walks in and you hear Bones say, F-A-K-E. Okay, Gwen Stefani, you clearly are not. And Javi then lays his nasty ass on the carpet where hundreds, if not thousands, of people have walked on after walking all over the streets of New York City. And he is tearing into some prime rib with a fucking plastic fork. Funny that Kale doesn't want Javi around with cameras, but she was fine with it earlier when Javi came over to her house. Remember when they were talking shit about Brianna? Kale Oh, I know I keep saying this over and over again, but she is just so self-serving. She's one of those people that plays by her own rules and changes them up whenever she wants. And her revisionist history of what happened in that one-on-one in that room, it just proves my point when she goes on to say she didn't curse one time in that room, but then she came on the stage guns blazing. Yeah. Exactly, Kale. She was calm in the room. Like, pick your story and stick to it. She's making up so many lies, she can't even keep track of them. Now, I don't think any of us can stand Javi at this point, but I do love that he called Kale on her bluff and was like, oh, okay, so go ahead and quit the show. You always say that, you're never gonna do it. That is such bullshit. Producer Larry then comes in, he does his job, he spins whatever he needs to with Brianna and Brittany, because he's got to get this taping done. So he says, well, you know, Dr. Drew, he's really trained to tackle this stuff and to talk it through with you, you know, blah, blah, blah. Clearly, he's got his position because he knows how to talk a lot of bullshit and get done what he needs to get done. Meanwhile, Kale is storming off backstage, yelling at her. I don't know if they're her friends, her assistants at this point, but she just barks at him. Let's go. I'm leaving. I mean, God, if my friend were to scream at me like that, I certainly would not be leaving with her. I would have quite a few things to say, maybe even throw some of that prime rib at her ass. But like the leeches they are, they just toddle right behind her like little trained monkeys and frickin' bone. She is dressed in her broke down Hooters uniform and she's trailing in behind last. Frickin' bone. And what do you know? How do we end this episode? Nessa shows up in hair and makeup with Leah. And we had to end it laughing somehow, and this is how they got us to do it. The two people in this franchise that have zero natural conversation ability whatsoever, trying to make sense of just what went down in the last couple hours. I mean, you might as well put two sloths in an escape room and have them figure it out. Well, with that, I actually have plenty more to say with my buddy Amanda. I'm going to be going on Amanda's podcast. Amanda loves to hate Teen Mom. We're going to be talking about this Teen Mom 2 reunion, as well as, oh my God, you're going to love this, the episode 1, season 1 of Teen Mom OG. Talk about a flashback. So make sure you check that out. Amanda loves to hate Teen Mom. And up next, Married at First Sight. Oh, Married at First Sight, another Tuesday evening together. However, I'm not going to lie to you guys, this episode was a total snooze. Maybe it's just in comparison to the last two episodes where you had things like, you know, immigration and felony charges. This episode just felt really boring. It just fell flat to me. Now, the only new thing that the show is doing, and I can't quite decide whether I like it or not, is that they're giving each couple $5,000 a month. This experiment is 60 days, if I remember correctly. So they have $10,000 altogether, and they can decide, do they want to use it towards their living accommodations? Do they want to save it? What do they want to do? I did think it was quite hilarious that Dr. Jessica was posing it to us in a way that she said, you know, the experts, they really thought about this. And since financial stress is the leading cause of marriage, they thought, well, you know, let's start our couples out on the right foot. Now, you know me, I have my theory. Many of you are not going to like this, but, you know, it's a TV show we're talking about. I'm not stalking these people down. I'm not going to be tracking down the producers or contacting the IRS or employers or whatnot. But my little conspiracy theory mind of mine wants to believe that perhaps Jessica pushed this agenda. Again, this is total theory, because John, her maybe boyfriend from last season, remember he was the one who quit his job, gave up his apartment and moved out, and he and Molly had to live together. Maybe, perhaps, some of these couples say they're going to stay together or stick it out throughout the experiment because they have nowhere else to fall back on. Just a thought. Again, you know my disgust for John runs through and through, and I like to throw that in there. who was on my mind because I just talked about it with Carrie the other week. But let's move forward with these couples. Let's start with Mia and Tristan. Now, Mia sure as shit is happy to move forward with Tristan. Of course she is, because what else is she going to do? She just got outed on, what is it, national, international TV as being a stalker. So of course she is going to cling on to Tristan and try to be like the very devoted wifey poo. Well, Tristan's apartment is $2,100 a month. He lives in a high rise. It's very bachelor basic. It's a nice apartment. There's no food in the fridge. There's lots of family photos. I tend to think it was probably like his mom was like, oh, here, I have some extra photos laying around the house that are already in frames. Hang that up on that entry wall. You kind of get that like first real apartment vibe. Now these two, although they say they're sleeping together, they're committed, I do not feel the chemistry between them. Mia likes to lift her shoulders up a lot. She's doing that very closed body posturing. I like to think she's folding into him because she's trying to disguise the bigger picture. Okay, you guys, can you tell I had a glass of red wine from Aldi this evening? I think it's kicking in. Now let's get to Mia's apartment. She's got this weird longhorn, what do you just call it, a skull or just a longhorn. It's totally random. I get it. It's a Texas thing. It's not my thing, but whatever. It wasn't horrible. Her apartment, according to Tristan, is for little people. And you know, when I heard that, I just perked up because it makes me think of TLC and Little People Big World and how much I hate Audge. But you know what? Mia at least owns it and is like, you know what? This really isn't the best place for us. So let's move into your apartment and then we'll talk about what we're going to do with that money. Speaking of that money, what are they going to do about it? Will Tristan, being the guy that is almost too good to be true, or maybe just too good for this show, says that, you know what, I will take care of the rent out of my own money. Let's just use this, that $5,000 for anything that we share together, whether it's food or places we go, things that we do. I actually think that is a very smart move. And I'll explain why when we start talking about Dave and Amber. But first, let's get to move-in day. Ooh. Now, most of the time, there's a little eventful thing that happens or a little excitement with moving day. But again, this episode just was, if you missed the episode, don't even bother watching it. These two have a little faux basketball game with their Keurig K-cups. And then on their first night together, Mia goes to bed with a full face of makeup and says once again, I love that you're my rock. You've been here through thick and thin. I love you. Yeah, she dropped the I love you. Now, Tristan's eyes did the same thing as mine. Like they got really big and then he didn't respond. He whispered something under his breath as the cameras were leaving the room and he said something like, oh, my love. Well, that is not the same thing. I remember when I started dating Dave, and I must have been the first one to say, I love you. And I remember I said, love you. And he responded with, I love spending time with you. Okay. Well, now that I know my husband, I know that it means the same thing. But I really think in the very back of Tristan's mind, at this point in filming, he probably didn't want to believe it himself. But he even knows that Mia's laying it on a little too thick, or maybe a lot too thick, a lot too early, and it's quite the rebound from that little HPV HIV test that she gave us during the reception. Now let's get to Amber and Dave. Dave, right out of the gate, wants to live at his own apartment because he's more comfortable there. He owns it. To him, it just makes the most sense. Amber doesn't seem too resistant to it. She wants to go see his place first, and right away when they walk in, there's a whole wall montage of photos of all of his friends. Now, I think that's nice, but I'll just say I don't really know any grown men that have, what is it, a montage? I said montage. Maybe I mean mural of just photos of just them and their friends. I don't know. Again, maybe it's because I don't know a ton of single men my age, but something about that just seems a little strange. Even though it's a little strange, Amber still likes it. She knows that his place is nicer than hers. It's bigger than hers. probably more organized, which is why she's so nervous about moving in. And I get it. I'm a neat freak myself, so I am sure it would terrify someone to move in because they'd be afraid that I would lose it and snap on them one day. And you know what? They're probably right. Now, she's also afraid because she has to bring her cat, Paisley, over. So on one day, Dave goes over to Amber's house just to probably please the camera crew and get some footage of her apartment. And he gets to meet Paisley. Well, I'm not anti-cat. I'm just not, you know, a huge cat fan, really just pets in general, again, because I'm afraid of them. It's nothing against them. It's me. I'm a big scaredy cat. Well, Dave really doesn't like Paisley right off the bat because he says Paisley is rambunctious. From what I saw, someone who tends to be afraid of animals, the cat didn't seem that rambunctious. It wasn't hissing at him. It wasn't clawing or pouncing or doing that little, I don't know what it's called, like that little cat stance thing when they don't like someone. So if the cat's doing anything against Dave later, it's probably because of Dave. Nevertheless, the apartment's too small. Just like they had agreed, they're going to move into Dave's apartment, but that was not without a little trickery by the editors or producers. They were eating dinner and they try to make it seem like, uh-oh, they might have to get their own place because Amber doesn't want to live in the apartment or the condo where Dave currently lives if he's lived there with any girl prior to her. Well, sure enough, we come back from commercial and the first words out of his mouth were, no, I've never lived here with any other girl. So, okay, drama that we didn't need. I actually could have told you even before they cut to commercial and made us sweat it out that there's no way a woman had lived there. And I'll tell you why. Because when they were drinking their champagne, there were still little stickers from Crate and Barrel on the bottom. No woman would ever let that fly. Now let's talk about the budget. What are they going to do with the $5,000? This I found a little interesting, not necessarily bad, but I'm going to compare it to what Tristan and Mia did. So they've decided that they're going to have a shared account for bills just overall, okay? Not even with that $5,000 yet. But Amber still wants to have her own account because she doesn't want Dave breathing over her shoulder, worrying about what she's spending her own money on. I get it. They spent way more time on it than they really needed to. All we need to know is that Amber's going to do her own thing, Dave's going to do his own thing, and they're going to have shared accounts for bills. But let's talk about that $5,000. Dave says, well, you know what? Why don't we take $2,500 of that $5,000 for the next 2 months towards the mortgage because we're both living here? Okay, sounds fair, right? Hang on to that. Then he says the other $2,500 should go towards savings. Hey, great. Nothing to argue about there. But let's think about what Tristan did. He said, you know what? Even though you're living here, I'm just going to keep paying my regular mortgage or regular rent that I had anyway. But Dave is saying, let me take half that money and pay my mortgage on a home that he already owns. Now, I'm not saying which one is right or wrong. Like, I really don't even know what I would do in that situation. But I'm thinking perhaps Tristan is seeing this as, if something goes wrong, she can't come after me and say, I put money towards the mortgage or towards the rent. I'm still entitled to that. However, Dave, perhaps he hasn't thought about that. I don't know if it's right or wrong, if it's a smart move, if it's a bad move, but it's clearly to his advantage, right? He's not taking money out of his personal paycheck to pay towards a mortgage on a home, condo, apartment that he owns. Maybe Amber does too. But if Amber's really spiteful and things fall through, I wonder if there is some sort of legal loophole she could come after him and be like, hey, I got screwed out money that went to pay your mortgage. I have no part of that. You know what I'm saying? I'm probably looking way too far into this than I need to, but you know what? Maybe that is just like the extra perk that a $5 red wine from Aldi gives you. Okay, now it's moving day, blah, blah, blah. You know, what's worse than actually moving? Watching other people move. David hates it. We hate it. Amber's lost her voice. That really could be, you know, a blessing in disguise. But what do we need to see? Oh, she loves shoes. Yeah. We went through it. And she's still feeling guilty because she's taking up his space and the cat is starting to get into all his shit in his apartment. he's really pissed off about that toilet paper too. I'm like, you want me to give you an extra roll? I mean, what is that, like 13 cents down the drain? Easy, David. And you know me, I'm pretty damn uptight. Now then we get to the first night and I like high-fived the air because we got our first brushing teeth scene. Mark that off on your bingo. Okay, well then they brush your teeth, they go to bed, and David is up all night. I'm guessing he's up all night and he's staring at that cat like, what the hell is the cat gonna get into? I have a feeling little Miss Paisley, I think it's a miss, right? A female cat. Little Miss Paisley is going to be quite the shit stirrer. Now let's talk about Bobby and Danielle. Oh, Bobby. Okay. Well, Danielle is packing a suitcase because she's already decided right when they get home that she's going to go spend the night at his place. And she's going to bring her dog, Henry, to introduce him to Bobby's dog, Ellie. Now, her place is small. There's no yard. Even though they haven't seen each other's homes, they already know, you know what, this place is not going to be the place for all of us, plus her two dogs and any foster dogs she takes in, because that's like her thing. She's a foster dog mom or foster dog auntie, whatever you call it. Okay, so they go to Bobby's house and we have this whole buildup. Danielle's waiting out in the yard with her dog, Henry. Bobby goes inside, gets his big black, I'm not good with dogs, Labrador, I want to say. They're both cute dogs. And all we hear Bobby before the commercial break, we hear a dog bellowing and barking. And Bobby is screaming, heel, heel. I totally had a panic because, again, I'm afraid of dogs, especially bigger dogs like that, because it was probably like 2 years ago I was running in my neighborhood. And one of my neighbors, beautiful, full-grown Labrador, yellow Labrador, something ran out of its house and like attacked me in the street as a grown adult. So anytime I see a bigger dog, like I automatically have this, oh my God, it's going to kill me moment. So throughout the whole commercial break, I'm like sweating like, oh my God, what if his dog kills hers? This is not going to go well. Well, again, these damn producers, they get us all hot and bothered for nothing because they come back from commercial break and the dogs are like sniffing each other's little assholes and stuff like that. They're best of friends. Even so much so that Bobby got excited and he started speaking in little baby talk like, oh, daddy, huh? Oof. If I were even remotely attracted to someone and I heard them starting to use that baby voice, it would be like an instant vaginal clench. Like, no, and we're closed for business. Not gonna happen. But Danielle, I mean, I don't know what the hell it is. Maybe it's the freaking dead ducks in the freezer, but she's freaking loving it. I mean, what the hell? Maybe the experts finally hit the jackpot. Okay, maybe they finally nailed it this time. It's been how many seasons, how many couples, but they have found the two little puzzle pieces that fit together, and it's these two. I'm not totally convinced of it yet. I'm just saying maybe. Now, it threw me off a little bit because it's not that Bobby's house is like gross or disgusting or terrible by any means, but Danielle kept on saying and describing things as, oh, this is so big. Oh, this is big. Ooh, this is bigger than mine. I'm starting to think that Danielle is viewing this world from a much different angle than the rest of us. Remember, she said something else was big. Maybe it's a little petite person thing. But again, maybe they found each other's match. Now, Bobby's shirt, help me out here. Was it purple with stripes? I think my eyes and my heart were willing it to be like a royal blue, but I kept getting purple hints or purple vibes. Again, maybe it was just my TV screen. Something about guys having the favorite color purple, which I know it to be true because I swear he was wearing some purple boxer shorts or something. Something I just don't like when guys like purple. I'm probably going to get some shitty iTunes review about it, but you know what? It's my opinion. Well, let's talk about their budget and their moving day. First of all, their budget. This was like the most scandalous of all the couples because Bobby has whipped out his laptop. He's got an Excel spreadsheet. They're all over it. And he finds out after crunching some numbers that they are over $3,000 in debt each month, or they're $3,000 over budget. Now, I only got a quick look at some of those line items, and it was things like eyelashes, Danielle mentioned her waxing, and then her Birchbox subscriptions, and also, oh yeah, that pesky little credit card payment. She's got like $15,000, let's probably say minimum because there might be some more. She's got that debt from traveling and other things. Well, Bobby is none the pleased about this because he tells us in a separate interview. Now, if you're like me and you read between the lines, you're very cynical about this show at times, I have a feeling that this was taped much later on and there's been some saltiness between the two that has occurred. And this overspending of hers or putting money on credit cards is just like another thing that annoys him. Well, Danielle doesn't know this at this point. She's still kind of being playful towards him. But even sitting there at the table, he was still kind of being nice about it, but he was still clearly annoyed. But I mean, what did he want her to do? Like, oh, how dare she go on these travels over the past few years, knowing that a pale, small-boned man with dead ducks in his freezer was going to be like jerking off over her QuickBooks file when she decided to get married at first sight. Like, how the hell is she supposed to know, freaking Bobby? Okay, well, what did they decide to do with the 10 grand in the end? This killed me because as much as Bobby says that he is this, what's the word, like spendthrift, or he's really good with money, he likes to save, from what I saw, and I had to confirm on Twitter because I wasn't quite sure I heard this correctly, they were going to use $8,000 of that to pay her lease off early. I'm just really hoping and praying and crossing my dead ducks in the freezer that she had like a year-long lease still to fulfill. I really hope it's not like, oh, she had to pay first and last month's rent or two more months' rent or something like that, and they overpaid for the payout, because that just wouldn't make sense. It just seems like an awful lot of money to have to pay off a lease. But I've owned homes for more years than I've rented, so I could be way off. That seemed like quite a bit of money just to throw away. Now let's get to moving day, because there really wasn't a lot to it. They hired movers and they moved them in, and Bobby says, she's my person, I'll let her do whatever the hell she wants to the house. Oh my God, what a prince. Well, she's also brought in a foster puppy. The dog peed on something, the dog bed or whatever, and I really got nervous because I thought that Bobby was just going to lose his shit, but he really didn't care. He was like, oh, that's great. And then, you know, what do you know? She doesn't like cooking. He likes it. He cooks. She does the dishes. Oh, how cute. Little dimple in the cheeks. Let's buy matching aprons. Ugh, hated it. Now, the first night I hated freaking more, because guess what? I think Danielle clogged the sink because she was taking a big old shit. No, she wasn't taking a shit in the sink. I know that. I just think she's like any other girl. She probably opened that water up and let that shit just run full force while she went and took a shit so that he wouldn't hear it. And then, she's clogged the sink when she finished up her business. And what's she going to say? Like, oh, sorry, I took a shit and ran 15 gallons of water when I shouldn't have. Well, Bobby is kind of pissed about it, but he goes off. He finds one of those little hair grabber, clogger, declogger things, sticks it down the drain. And then I don't know why. I don't know what we did to deserve this other than give them ratings. But we see the freaking hairball that Bobby pulls out of that drain. I can't even stand seeing that or smelling that in my own home. And if you have one of those things, you know exactly what I'm talking about, and you're probably feeling squeamish right now. But they showed it over and over and over again. I don't even know how Danielle stayed in the room. I don't even know how the camera crew stayed in the room. That is so freaking disgusting. But it's also proof that Bobby has had this overgrown little boy haircut for far too long, because if he's lived there by himself, that means that it's all his disgusting, long, manly hair in there. Can you tell I'm not a big fan of his haircut? Just cut that shit. All right. Well, that wraps it up for Married at First Sight. Sorry for that kind of a doozy of an episode. Just really nothing fun happened. If you're looking for something fun to listen to in the meantime, again, check out Amanda Loves to Hate Teen Mom. I seriously had so much fun with her. I talked to her a little bit earlier today, right after I recorded the Teen Mom segment earlier, and oh my God, we laughed for like 90 minutes straight. It was fantastic. Also tune in to Moms on the Rocks. We got some good things coming up this week. And subscribe on Patreon. Lots of good things coming up. Patreon.com/RealityTVPod. Remember Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at RealityTVPod. Tell a friend. Share the good snark. And until next time, stay salty.